And you are listening to the Fans of Wrestling Show here on the FOW Radio Network. I am Patrick with Danny Danger and Mika Villas back together after a week break. And it was nice, but I definitely miss talking to you guys. What has been up with y'all?
Hanging and banging. I don't know. It sounds
breaking necks and cashing checks.
Damn straight.
Like Chronic in WCW 2000, yeah. Brian Adams and Brian Clark, we breaking necks and cashing checks.
May they both rest in peace.
I know that's weird to think about, isn't it? Oh goodness. Maybe we shouldn't make that reference. Something about the APA. They're, you know, at least they're both alive still.
Don't jinx them, Danny.
Playing card. Oh goodness, yeah. Speaking of jinx, today is the day of which we're recording, is the birthday of the American Dream Dusty Rhodes. May he rest in peace and his legacy never be forgotten.
Yes. Amen to that. I was waiting for you to cut a promo, a Dusty-like promo or something there.
I can talk about my son, Cody Rhodes, and his friends in the Bullet Club. But, you know, we gonna save that for somebody else, Daddy. That ain't for you, Daddy. That's for somebody else. That was a good Steve Austin promo when he was making fun of Dusty in, like, ECW when he was talking about him getting fired from WCW. It was, like, the brief time between WCW and before Steve went back to WWF to be Stunning Steve Austin. They did the whole, like, Steve-a-mania, and he was cutting this promo talking about how in WCW, and he's like, I bring this idea, and I say, oh, man, you know, I got this big idea. Gonna put me in the Macho Man, and we're gonna do this big feud, and it's gonna come to this match, and we're gonna have this pay-per-view and all this, and say, that ain't for you, Daddy. That's for somebody else. Say that for somebody else, Daddy. That ain't your kind. That was, you know, a bad Dusty impression done by Steve Austin doing the bad Dusty impression.
Inception impressions.
It's the impression within the impression of the bad impression of the bad impression. But yeah, that was a good time because, you know, he was doing the sun gun, but he was like doing it on the guardrail and stuff in ECW, so it looked nasty as hell. Poor Mikey Whipwreck took that more times than he cares to probably think about these days.
If he can even remember it. If
he can even remember it. Who knows? Mikey kind of went crazy there for a while. We don't know what exactly he remembers and doesn't remember. But yes, you know, there in the last 2 weeks, we've all been to a few different live wrestling events here in the state of Georgia. There are many more to come. You know, we have a lot to talk about, the NXTs and the WWEs and the Evolutions and a lot about New Japan. There's been a lot of stuff going there this past weekend we got to talk about. You know, I mean, where do we want to start?
Well, let's start with New Japan Pro Wrestling because we did have a lot going on the last few weeks. Of course, you know, coming off the G1 climax where Tanahashi became the number one contender for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. A lot going on. And first stop, they came here to the United States again. And we got quite a good show. Let me run down the card real quick. Then we'll talk about, you know, what we like, what we didn't out of it. Taguchi Japan defeated Roppongi 3K. The Addiction defeated Bullet Club Elite. Jeff Cobb, Chris Sabin, and Flip Gordon defeated Goto, Beretta, and Chuck Taylor. Suzuki Gun defeated Los Ingobernables de Japón. Jay White and Ghetto defeated Tanahashi and Kushida. Marty Scurll defeated Will Ospreay. And the Guerrillas of Destiny defeated the Young Bucks to become the new IWGP Tag Team Champions. Cody defeated Juice Robinson to become the IWGP United States Champion. And the Golden Lovers defeated Okada and Ishii in your main event. That all ended up with Bullet Club Elite closing the show and what was supposed to be a one-on-one match between Golden Lovers at King of Pro Wrestling was changed, and we were left with the announcement that at King of Pro Wrestling we would get Kenny Omega defending the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, not only against his best friend Kota Ibushi, but also against Cody Rhodes, because they make all the rules, they do all they want, they make history, and they do things their way. And while, you know, New Japan and fans may not necessarily be accustomed to three ways, they were going to do one in the main event. All right. So a few things here. Cody Rhodes, new United States champion. That means one more belt from New Japan Pro Wrestling is now in the hands of a non-Japanese wrestler. As well as the Guerrillas of Destiny. Of course, the Young Bucks had the title, so that really stayed. So that did not leave a Japanese wrestler. But here, another Gaijin has a New Japan Pro Wrestling Championship.
But it went from one Gaijin to another Gaijin.
I try to forget the Juice was champion, though, so.
Oh, wow. That whole title ran.
I mean, he did okay for the, you know, for the championship. The fans started kind of taking to him, and that's the important thing. And whether, you know, I mean, it's, they're still a Japanese product, and so, of course, their core group are going to be the Japanese fans. And the Japanese fans were the ones who kind of started getting behind Juice, and the reason that they kind of put him in a little bit higher higher profile matches, and eventually he, you know, gave him the belt. He's not, you know, connecting as well in the United States, especially for the US shows, which of course we talked about when that US belt was first kind of made. We're like, that's Cody's belt to win. Like, they made that belt for Cody, you know? That's, if they're going to do expansion, he's the biggest guy who's like, you know, Mr. USA kind of, you know, where there are other gaijins, but a lot of the other gaijins are more established in New Japan, I would say, even the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega. Like, I think the Japanese people have adopted those guys more to their own because of longer tenures in Japan and having done more. So they're gaijins, but they're not seen as evil invading gaijins, where Cody's kind of still borderline. Cody's still an American wrestler who sometimes wrestles for New Japan. So we talked about that being his belt to win. It just apparently took a little bit longer than we thought it would, but he's got it. And yet again, now he has more belts. The guys, he's starting Cody's starting to amass quite the collection of championship titles.
With that, you know, then we look at the tag team championships and Guerrillas of Destinies winning the belts from the Young Bucks in the war between the Bullet Club OGs and the Bullet Club Elite. This, the Bullet Club Civil War here, they got the best of them as far as the Guerrillas of Destiny taking the championship.
The OGs are out to prove why they are the OGs, and that Bullet Club was nothing or is nothing without them. And they're still recruiting. I mean, they picked up a Switchblade, and they're still looking and going after talent, no matter who, man or woman. So it's going to be interesting to see what else the OGs pull from up their sleeve, so to speak. They don't really wear sleeves, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Some people really loved the main event. Some people were slightly disappointed. You know, I've seen both. I thought it was really good. And, you know, anytime I get to see the Golden Lovers in action is great. And, you know, this is a really fun main event for the show. Overall, I thought the show told a lot of good stories, you know, continuing to look at that relationship between Ghetto and Jay White. You know, I mean, Ghetto turning on Okada, first of all, and stabbing his golden egg or whatever you want to call him. And going with the younger, maybe hungrier guy. Okada has been in sort of a losing streak. And, of course, at the destruction shows. It was destruction shows, right? That's where he turned? Okay. And then seeing Okada losing to Tanahashi at a destruction show and then turning on him there, picking Jay White's side, of course. Now Jay White, we're gonna talk about King of Pro Wrestling in a minute. Then getting to wrestle Tanahashi is just kind of heartbreaking a little bit. To see how Ghetto turning on Okada, but a lot more apparently, a lot more on that. But I gotta say, at some point, eventually, we're gonna see Okada versus Ghetto in a one-on-one match. Just gonna have to lead to that. I mean, Jay White as well, but I think for emotional purposes, I think a Ghetto versus Okada match will be likely to happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's the bigger story. You know, of course, Jay White's the one who swung the first chair, and, but the big betrayal is Ghetto, who's been with Okada for several years, helping him lead the Chaos faction, and, that's the big thing. So I don't, Ghetto may not have a whole lot of big matches left in him, but he's definitely due one with Okada. We may see a lot of different forms before we see that one-on-one eventually, but that's, I think, where the big money is. That's the big longer form story. Jay White's just the new upstart young kid. He decided to take, take and start trying to give his guidance too.
Yeah. So with that, now the Guerrillas of Destiny are not only the IWGP Tag Team Champions, but they're also the Never Open Weight 6-Man Championships with one Bone Soldier, of course, the newest member of Bullet Club, Taiji Ishimori. So, yeah, Bullet Club OGs are getting stronger. But good show here. All right, King of Pro Wrestling. That's the show that just happened. And, well, we got a lot more storytelling. Both Ingobernables of Japón and Bullet Club OGs, letting people know that they would be new recruits. So let's first start with Los Ingobernables de Japón, who welcomed their first, their newest member. So they announced their newest member in 8-man tag action as Dragon Gate Original Shingo Takagi joined Los Ingobernables de Japón. Before we go over the card and what, the thoughts on the show, guys, what an addition. Of course, last month, Shingo announced that he would be leaving Dragon Gate and be a free agent and, worked in other places. Apparently, he had desires to go elsewhere and do different things. Of course, he also did the favors for Pac before he left at Dragon Gate. But here we go. He is now part of the New Japan Pro Wrestling roster and with Los Ingobernables de Japón.
Well, I mean, I think it's a big thing for Shingo, to get a bigger stage. Dragon Gate's a great promotion, but their worldwide expansion is not the same that New Japan is. That's why he wanted to go to New Japan, because bigger exposure across the world, not just in Japan. And of course, that would translate to more money for him. But he's a fantastic get for New Japan as well, especially the LIJ. Shingo, having spent a lot of time working with lighter weight guys, he's agile, very strong. I think he fits well into the group and into the style that LIJ has, where they're very, their strong style, but they're, but because they've, several of their members have, you know, lucha backgrounds, have done excursions to Mexico, they have that, that lucha kind of, that's one of the things that sets them apart as far as a faction in New Japan, as a lot of guys, their guys have a bit of a lucha edge and flavor in some of their move sets. And Shingo fits that perfectly. Shingo's a hell of a talent. He's done a lot, you know, with traveling around the world. He's done some stuff with Ring of Honor and stuff in Europe, you know, small excursions, but yeah, primarily a Dragon Gate guy. I'm excited to see the multitude of matchups that we can get of Shingo now that he's in New Japan.
You said it. It's the huge feather in the cap for LIJ, for New Japan, for Shingo himself. When New Japan hit America, that was big. And this is, again, a way for him to expand himself, to get his talent out there to the entire quote unquote wrestling world. Everybody's watching New Japan. Everybody has their eyes on the product. People are discovering this on a daily basis. So why not get yourself right into the mix so people will understand who you are and see your talent right now, as it just continues to skyrocket. So yeah, it was awesome.
So yeah, kudos on that get for Los Ingobernables. So here was the card for King of Pro Wrestling. We'll go into more details on this show. Suzuki Gun defeated Yoshi Thunder Liger and Tiger Mask to retain the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championships. GBH defeated Taguchi Japan's Juice Robinson and Toa Inari. Bullet Club OGs defeated Bullet Club Elite in 8-man tag team action. Ishii, Goto, and Osprey defeated Suzuki, Taishi, and Iizuka. Los Ingobernables de Japón, of course, with Shingo making his debut, defeated Okada, Yano, and Roppongi 3K. Evil and Zack Sabre Jr. ended in a no contest. More on that in a hot minute. Kushida defeated Marty Scurll to win the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. What is it, 6 times now? Hiroshi Tanahashi defeats Jay White to retain the rights for the number one contendership for the title shot at Wrestle Kingdom. Which I think, bearing any drastic changes, it will be official. Tanahashi will face the IWGP Heavyweight Champion at Wrestle Kingdom. And Kenny Omega defeats Cody Rhodes and Kota Ibushi to retain the IWGP Championship. Again, making this official. It is Omega versus Tanahashi at Wrestle Kingdom. So first, let's talk Bullet Club versus Bullet Club. The OGs, again, continuing to win the battles in the Civil War as they defeat the Young Bucks, Paige, and Owens. You gotta say, I mean, they're doing pretty good.
Well, the stuff is getting over with the crowd right now. I'm fearing that if both sides just continue to add more people and more people, that eventually, like, I guess now since American fans especially got kind of poisoned by the NWO outstaying its welcome, you know, to where they had the NWO Red and Black and into Black and Silver, and Black and Silver was kind of like, you know, all the guys that weren't the big names apart from a couple, you know, the big guys who were there all the time in Black and Silver, you know, were Vincent and Buff Bagwell, and like the reject end, and you had all the bigger names, either they had gone or they were injured or they weren't coming around as much anymore, or they were with the NWO Red and Black, and like it just became this sad parody of itself. And I think as American fans, we're all kind of fearing that the Bullet Club could be reaching that. And so you have the OGs who essentially are like, you know, at least in American fans' eyes, the Bullet Club, you know, the elite, the golden elite, whatever, they're like the cool guys. They're the NWO Wolfpack, okay? They're the, you know, they're the cool, the fun ones, the cool heels, where the OGs are like the ones that American fans at least didn't seem to care as much about. Fale and Guerrillas of Destiny, and now they're adding, you know, and Takahashi, and like they're adding other guys now, but I think that's, yeah, it's getting over more with the Japanese crowd, whereas American fans, a lot of the American fans are kind of like, dude, those are like the NWO Black and White. Like, those are the guys that the American fans don't care as much about. They're just adding more people to it. That's going to be the group that stays out. It's welcome once the other, you know, the elite and stuff kind of spawns off and does different things or whatever. I think that's kind of what a lot of us are fearing already, that it's becoming that you have factions within factions within factions, because you have the gold, you have the Bullet Club, and then you have the elite, and then you have the golden elite, and then you have, like, it's, you know, within, it's just going to become a parody of a parody of a parody. And it's, I don't think anybody wants that to happen to the Bullet Club, because I don't think anybody wants that kind of detriment to come to New Japan Pro Wrestling. But Japanese wrestling, if you look at a lot of other promotions especially, are always been very heavy factions. Okay, that was, you know, New Japan, of course, still, you know, you have Chaos and these kind of things. And a lot of those faction stories don't translate to American stuff as much. But, like, that's what Dragon Gate is. Dragon Gate is piles and piles of factions, and it's people leaving and people turning and jumping to this faction. These couple guys leave and they start a new faction, and it's like that's very, very Japanese pro wrestling. So I think it'll still get over, but I think a lot of the American fans are afraid of just it making the product less interesting and harder to follow, especially when the promos aren't in English, when most of these things are explained in the press conferences, which aren't in English or aren't aired live. It makes it less accessible and harder to follow who's doing what and why. So I'm just kind of a little hesitant with this whole, the feud within the feud, as to where it goes and how long it lasts. I just don't want it to wear out its welcome and end up hurting New Japan's expansion to the United States.
I get what you're saying, where we don't want it to become diluted and be like that NWO spinoff where every color of the rainbow had a NWO faction for it. But I kind of like what they're doing on social media, the OGs.
Tom is ruthless on social media, dude.
Yes, that's why I love it. I love it so much. And I think that they will get to a point, not where they'll have 100 people, but they've got, you know, the baddest of the bad on their side, and they'll call it, you know, just like the Shield, to pull some American reference, doesn't need to add a fourth member. We got these three badasses and we're good. They're going to reach their badass quota and just go from there, where the other half of the Bullet Club might add a few more 100 people like they had ringside. But these guys, the OGs are like, yo, we're a good enough squad. We don't need 850 people. We got this. So, and again, the war words, I mean, I love the back and forth on the social medias. And I think that they've got a plan probably for just the right number of badasses in their group. And then they're just kind of going to go from there, that they don't need, you know, 850 people like the other half needs. I also think the social media aspect of it gives a revitalization to the Bullet Club, because at a point we were all joking like, oh my God, there's so many people in the Bullet Club, whatever, everybody's a member. Well, now they're kind of branching off and going like, screw that crap. Everybody's not a member. These are a select handful of people or handpicked people, and everybody else, you know, can pretty much just go to hell. It's making us talk about the Bullet Club again in the sense of, okay, here are the OGs, and they're correct that it got stupid when they added all those people. I think they're kind of doing a parody in a way of the NWO, how it had all those people in it and all the colors or whatever. And they're probably going to pull back a little bit, I feel, into just their own little faction and maybe not call the Bullet Club anymore because they'll be over enough to do that. I don't know. That's my thought.
It could be a lot of different things. I definitely want to see where this is going and when they're finishing this. Obviously, Kenny's going to be busy with Tanahashi at Wrestle Kingdom. But then again, Tanahashi kind of has a problem now with Bullet Club. There's a lot that could happen between now and then. And who knows? We may not have, you know, Bullet Club Elite at the Wrestle Kingdom. Let's just think about that. Let's not forget that Cody, the Young Bucks, Paige, I think Skrull, and Omega, all of their contracts expire in January. And they may decide to move on to the Fed. If that happens, then this storyline basically has to get wrapped up at Wrestle Kingdom. And it could be a battle of everybody except for Kenny, because he's busy, and battling for the rise of Bullet Club. Or we could see something happen at New Year's Dash the next day. Who knows? It's kind of, you know, up in the air. There could be a lot of plans, but unless they have committed to staying, and I don't think they have, because they probably need to make sure that they are milking as much money as they can from Ring of Honor and New Japan Pro Wrestling before signing a new contract. And they're pretty much in a great position right now. So a lot could happen. So it's not like this is going to drag a long way, and they'll find ways to keep it interesting. But let's talk about how it became interesting. Hiroshi Tanahashi defeats Jay White. Then Jay White and Ghetto post-match attack Tanahashi. Out comes Okada. Okada trying to battle against Jay White, and Ghetto gets rid of Jay White. Finally has Ghetto in his hands. He's about to crush him till there's no tomorrow. And out comes Ghetto's one and true love. And hold on, Okada, don't do this. And Okada stops, and he's not going to do anything now. And he's thinking about it. Then he's questioning what's going on. And then out comes Bullet Club OGs. And they surround the ring. Nobody knows what's going on. But in the end, it was all a trap. It looked like an invitation for Okada to join Bullet Club OGs. It was just a ruse. And they all joined together and beating down Okada, showing down that the Switchblade is for life. Again, newest members of Bullet Club OGs. And the numbers for the Civil War, I gotta say, are starting to be strong in Bullet Club OG's hands. Your thoughts here on Jay White joining Bullet Club OGs?
I mean, the bigger thing is not just Jay White joining the OGs, it's Jado and Ghetto. And, you know, I mean, like, yet again, that's Jay White's the young guy coming in with them, but Jado and Ghetto are the real OGs of New Japan Pro Wrestling, you know? So I think that, at least to Japanese fans, I think that's a lot bigger story. To American fans, it's Jay White because he's a younger guy. We've seen him in the higher profile matches more recently, you know? He had his small excursion in the United States. And then when he returned to New Japan as a Switchblade character. But as we talk to stop the parody, I would hope that with the acquisition of these three that the OGs stop right there and don't continue to add new members. But I mean, that's kind of going back to what the Bullet Club was about. You know, is bringing this kind of heel tack, you know, typical what we know is in the United States in American wrestling, heel tactics, the run-ins, the beat downs, these kind of things that don't necessarily happen in Japanese wrestling as frequently. And that's what the Bullet Club originally did, and that's where they got over, because they were bringing something to New Japan that New Japan hadn't seen as much. So a return to that, I think, is kind of the core of what makes the Bullet Club the OGs. But if they stop right there with Jado Gatto and Jay White now as the new additions, I think they're a pretty strong unit. Yet again, I think, you know, so we did see kind of a possible pairing of Tanahashi and Okada, you know, working now on the same side as they have common enemies, which I think is also a huge thing. If we get Jado and Gedo versus Tanahashi and Okada, you know, I think that could be a huge match in itself as well. Just interesting stuff. And yet again, returning back to what the Bullet Club once was and could be again, I guess, if they play it right.
It's a huge get for the OGs, and I think they make a statement with their recent acquisitions. You want to talk about OGs, people who have been there since day one, or people who have earned their spot and not just being given a spot in the Bullet Club. Let's talk Gato. And I mean, hello, day one, New Japan. Jay White, young boy, worked his way, you know, up the ranks or what have you. So I think that this is not just some influential and badass people that they've added to their ranks. They're making a statement with these particular people saying, listen, everybody wants to come around here and act like they've done some work. And we've been the foundation. We've been putting in the work since day one. And we are the reason that you are able to do what you do, or we allow you to do what you do. So it's a dual-edged sword with getting all these guys on the OG side. And Bullet Club is not fine, guys. I'm going to just go on a limb and say that it's not fine.
Let's not forget that earlier this year, the issues we thought we were going to get were between Cody and Kenny. And then the Young Bucks sort of picked a side. And we thought that was going to be the biggest problem within Bullet Club. And apparently that small little problem caused this huge big problem between Bullet Club. I don't know. I can't wait to see how it all plays out. But, you know, Bullet Club finally is starting to be interesting for a bit. And how about Jay White? I know he came in as Switchblade and sort of soft, you know, up and downs. He was very interesting at the beginning, then kind of mellowed down. But then, man, it feels like he's really upped his game, especially through the G1. And now he's been put in this position, being with Bullet Club and, you know, being in this, you know, feud with Tanahashi and Okada. I gotta say, he's pretty much paying off for what they were expecting Switchblade to be when he first came back to New Japan Pro Wrestling.
What they wanted him to be, what they trained him in the dojos to be, what he put all that work in to be. So they're getting their return and then some.
So moving on, we were supposed to have a singles match between Evil and Zack Sabre Jr., but that didn't ever happen because one of the Druids ended up being Chris Jericho attacking Evil. Of course, they will be wrestling for the Intercontinental Championship. Pretty much a surprise appearance by Chris Jericho, but at this point, that is his new thing. He makes these surprise appearances, weird stuff on his face.
Yeah. See you on the Jericho Cruise. Why are you calling it the Jericho Cruise, man? That's what everybody else calls it. Yeah, no, it was wild. It was fun. It was cool. And yet again, sets up for a bigger match down the road. And yet, like you said, that's kind of what Jericho's doing. Popping up where you don't expect him, man. Wrestling is his game. He makes the rules.
Jericho's wrestling's Carmen Sandiego. You never know where in the world he's going to be. He's supposed to be here doing that, being there doing that, and he's just like, you know what? I'm just gonna go do this show and then fly back across the country or ocean and rock out, you know, 100,000 people. No big.
Okay, so let's close it up with Kushida here, defeating Marty Scurll, becoming the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion.
I mean, it's his division, and it has been for several years. You know, other guys have kind of come and gone, but he's been the consistent. He's the homegrown guy, and you know, he kind of was the guy who helped set up and make Hiromu, you know, Takahashi, the Time Bomb. And unfortunately, with Hiromu's injury, you know, we're still not sure if and when he'll return back to the wrestling ring. It's Kushida's division, and Kushida can take that belt anytime he wants, and he is taking it back once again. I personally love Kushida. He's absolutely one of my favorite junior heavyweights in the world right now, and he has been for quite a few years. So I'm happy to see the belt back on him. Happy to see him in some higher profile matches, you know, coming up leading into the big season for New Japan. You know, it's kind of Wrestle Kingdom season leading up to the January 4th show. But I love Kushida, and he is the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Division.
He is the division. It was weird watching him. It was good, but it was weird seeing him with Alex Shelley as a time splitter, because he had been, like, I guess the cornerstone of this division for so long. So watching Kushida again beat Marty Scurll, which Marty, poor Marty. Can we talk about him just getting beat on all these major events? And
he's just Marty. Let him get beat up, okay?
I mean, out of the Bullet Club, he's the weakest link. I mean, for Pete damn sake, Chase Owens wins matches more than Marty Scurll. That should tell you
Well, here's the thing too, though. No, there, Marty is wanting to move up to heavyweight. Okay, that's the thing. The match at All In with him versus Okada, the whole story with that was Marty trying to prove that he could hang with the top heavyweights, that he could be a heavyweight. You know, apparently they had sketches on being the Elite for a long time of him, like, eating a bunch of junk food, trying to pack extra pounds on. So now that he has left, he has dropped that championship, he essentially is free from that, from the junior heavyweight division, to move up to heavyweight if he so wants to. So, you know, sometimes in order to do that, free yourself up of your prior obligations, you got to put over the other guys. And so that's kind of what he's doing, I think. Funny you bring up Chase Owens. I was talking to somebody about Chase Owens recently and him being a Bullet Club member, and how he's kind of this, like, the forgotten Bullet Club member, because there was no big promo. There was no big reveal. It's like right after Kenny Omega came to New Japan, and they're like, hey, he's the cleaner, he's the junior heavyweight, like, he's the guy who's going to clean up the division to get the belt for us. Then it's time for the junior tag team tournament. And so they needed another junior to team with Kenny, and here's Chase Owens in Bullet Club gear. Like, he just kind of shows up, and he's Kenny's partner. And the thing is, like, Chase never took that gear off. He just kind of showed up with some Bullet Club gear, and he never left. Like, that's, he's, and I don't, like, he is and apparently on interviews, like even Foley and stuff, like bashing, like, oh, he's not real Bullet Club, like he hasn't put in enough tours and all this. Like, they don't, even within the Bullet Club, he's not respected as being Bullet Club, but like he is absolutely 100%, like he was brought in with, you know, with Bruce Starks, basically, when the NWA Inception was coming in, they brought in Chase. And basically what he does is he makes enough appearances on Japan shows so that people remember he's in the Bullet Club. So then when he goes back to NWA Bumblehole, West Virginia, they can say, we got the Bullet Club coming in, y'all. We got the Bullet Club coming in here. The hottest thing in wrestling. We got it right here in Bumhole, NWA, West Virginia. And then it's Chase Owens. And you're like, oh.
I laugh because it's true.
It is. It's true. It's not that he's a bad wrestler. He's not bad. He's just not that great. He's not exceptionally memorable. And that's why he never really fit into the Bullet Club, is everybody had personality, larger than life personalities, or they melded with the other personalities well. You know, like Hangman kind of found a little bit of a personality, but he melded with the Bucks so well that he became part of that. And Chase just is just kind of floating. He's Bullet Club's Vincent, basically, is who he is. Okay, he's the Vincent or the Buff Bagwell. You know, at one time everybody thought, hey, okay, who's this guy? And then they just kind of forgot, and they're like, oh yeah, he's still wrestling here? Okay. Good for him. Good for him. Oh, okay.
You know, I think that he definitely serves a purpose, though. I mean, he's in there, and I think he's done a good job paying his dues, doing the jobs that he, as he needed to. He was always the person that you could rely on if you needed a filler for the junior. Every good stable needs a Virgil.
Yep, wrestling, international wrestling superstar Virgil, sitting at the desk by himself. That's Chase Owens, okay? Except he's got Bullet Club merch all over it. Bullet Club international star from wrestling's hottest group, the Bullet Club. And Chase Owens just sitting.
I mean, come on, think about it, you know? He goes to wrestling shows in the South, the Midwest, or whatever, as, you know, Bullet Club member.
Too sweet, everybody.
Using the Bullet Club theme song. I mean,
it's what Doc Gallows was doing before he got signed, okay?
I started this, didn't I? Damn, okay.
And only like half of that's probably used. It was funny. It's good. Pat, we'll let Patrick edit whatever he wants.
It's great. I'm happy for Chase Owens. You know, I mean, he could have been lost in the shuffle. He could have been the lost, forgotten Bullet Club member.
I mean, he is the lost, forgotten
Bullet Club. No, but he's not forgotten. He's still getting booked.
But that doesn't mean he's good. That doesn't mean he's like, Vincent still got bookings, okay? But he was the forgotten member. If you ever watched WCW Saturday Night, Vincent was wrestling there, okay? You know? Beating up Jerry Flynn or something on a weekly basis. Okay. He was fighting Barry Horowitz and putting him down, you know, like Vincent still got bookings. Okay. He was always there when the beatdowns came, but he wasn't going to be a big name. He was just like, oh yeah, he's still here. Cool. He is the forgotten member because you don't remember that he's there until you see him.
Yeah. But no, I think still different. I think that they look, first of all, he got in shape. All right. In at least better shape.
Vincent was in shape, okay?
Hey, you know, if they make Chase Owens a never open weight trios champion, you know, you're going to remember this day and this conversation.
He'll be forgotten third member of that team with two bigger names, okay? It'll be like the Gorillas of Destiny and Chase Owens or something, okay? Like, it's going to be people that you care about, and then Chase is there so that you know he's going to be the one taking the pinfall when they lose those belts.
I don't even know how we got to this from talking about Kushida's sixth reign as junior heavyweight.
Talking about Skrull moving up to heavyweight and possibly doing different stuff at the Bullet Club.
I, you know, speaking of moving to heavyweight, though, this could very well be Kushida's last reign before he moves up.
You think Kushida would move up to heavyweight?
I think that it's going to happen, right?
Not necessarily, because sometimes so historically you had guys who were light heavyweights, you know, and some of them moved up to heavyweight and with disaster and didn't really do anything. Okay, Jushin Liger went heel turn and went up to heavyweight, and They took Otani and put him up to heavyweight in the early 2000s as well, but he had limited success. And then you put those guys back to junior heavyweights, and you realize that's where they thrive. They didn't need to be against guys 200 pounds. They're seen, you know, heavier than them. They need to be guys, you know, they can work in that division. Not everybody has to jump up to heavyweight. I think Kushida doesn't need to. The division needs Kushida.
That is also a good point. I mean, just because you get older does not mean that you have to move up in weight. Look at Liger, right?
That's what I'm saying. He went up to heavyweight for like a year, year and a half, and then went back down to junior because that was where he was doing the most good. Liger trivia, he actually still lives in the dojo where, you know, young boys are supposed to live until they allowed to wear, until they go on their national excursion and get a gimmick and all this, and then they can move out. But he still lives there in the dojo and works and trains and is still pushing the next generation as much as he can, but he wants to live alongside them. Just another reason that Liger's, you know, the greatest of all time.
Yeah, I would definitely say right now Kushida is, you know, I think he's definitely in the conversation right now. After everything that he's done now, 6-time junior heavyweight champion. You know, we may be talking Kushida as the greatest junior heavyweight of all times by the end of his career.
It's very possible.
He's got a great career, and he's only 35 years old. That's the scary part.
He could still have another 10 years easily. But not just that. I mean, especially in Japanese wrestling, I think there's more that goes into a lengthy career and making somebody the greatest of all time than just their ring work and championships. In the United States, you know, we look at somebody and say, oh yeah, this guy held the most belts. That means he's the best. But like some of the things that make guys like Chono and guys like Liger and these kind of guys like considered some of the best is not just the work they did in the ring, but everything else they did to behind the scenes when they left the ring to booking or to training or different things to help push the product, push the market. Help instill a stronger future. I think those are some of the things that they look at in Japan to establish somebody as like an ultimate true legend. It's not just, oh, the guy held the title a bunch of times. I think that's part of it. So yet again, at 35, we'll have to see what his career does. But yeah, with his 6th title run and easily at least another 5 to 10 years on his career, he could very well hold that belt another 6 times realistically. So it remains to be seen, but he's absolutely my favorite part of the junior division.
All right. So let's go ahead and move on, from New Japan Pro Wrestling to the WWE and the Super Showdown Australia. 10 matches. The New Day defeated the Bar to retain the WWE SmackDown Tag Team Championships. Charlotte Flair defeated Becky Lynch by disqualification when Becky Lynch used her belt to get herself disqualified and retain her championship.
Smack that ugly hoe in her face. Try to make her so ugly she becomes pretty again.
John Cena and Bobby Lashley defeated Kevin Owens and Elias.
Who no longer has a last name. It happens to many people in the WWE. Over time, they no longer have a last name or a first name. They just go to one name.
The Iconics defeated Asuka and Naomi.
A win in their home country in WWE. I was shocked.
Yeah, you don't say.
Especially the heels winning in their home country.
AJ Styles defeated Samoa Joe in a no count, no disqualification match to retain the WWE Championship. Ronda Rousey and the Bella Twins defeated the Riot Squad. Buddy Murphy defeated Cedric Alexander to win the WWE Cruiserweight Championship.
Another hometown guy getting the big victory instead of losing to get the Heat.
The Shield defeated Braun Strowman, Dolph Ziggler, and Drew McIntyre. Daniel Bryan defeated Miz to become the number one contender for the WWE Championship. And Triple H defeated The Undertaker in this last, in their last match ever.
The end of an era. For real this time.
Lies.
For the time being, until 6 months down the road when they have a big event in India and India says, hey man, we want to see Triple H and The Undertaker. And they go, yeah.
No problem. Your checks are good.
Just your checks are good. Rupee conversion rate is strong right now, my friend.
All right, so let's start from the top. Triple H defeats The Undertaker after a lot of interference, a lot of shenanigans, but then, you know, Triple H tells The Undertaker something to the extent of, okay, I think we've done enough, whatever. They all embrace, hug. Undertaker looks like he can barely stand. And, you know, Mayor Kane is there huffing and puffing while
bald ass HBK is there too. Yeah. HB Shizzle coming back to cool with the kids.
And of course, Trips. Triple H made this another disqualification match so they could do all the shenanigans because he's, you know, the man in charge. But what happened, what looked like to be a celebration, fireworks were blasting, and then The Undertaker stopped. And then The Undertaker attacked Triple H. And then Kane attacked Shawn Michaels. And then Undertaker tombstoned Triple H. And I believe then Shawn Michaels. It's been almost a week. My memory's not exactly there right now. So then on Monday Night Raw, we get the challenge because the boys are back. D-Generation X is back.
Those punk kids, those 40-plus-year-old rich white males sticking it to the man, baby. We're back with dick jokes and fart jokes and sticking it to the old fuddy-duddies. We're back. We're telling people to suck it on PGTV, y'all. Like, oh my god. Like, okay. The second incarnation of DX when they came back as PG was the worst shit ever. And you're doing it even more and again, like, just.
So it looks like it's gonna be D-Generation X versus the Brothers of Destruction at Crown Jewel in Saudi Arabia. Your thoughts on this match, or was supposed to be a match, and then the fallout?
It was terrible, and it's going to be terrible, and it set something else up that's going to be even more terrible.
Oh, my gosh. Why are you trying to rain on childhood? I mean, I know
that childhood is over. It's been over for a long time. Your childhood's dead, okay? You called it a childhood for a reason, because when you were a kid, you were young and dumb, and you thought stuff that sucked was cool, okay? Because you were a kid and you were dumb and you didn't know any better. But now we're old and we're angry and we're pissed off and we're jaded. And we realize that shit sucked back then. We just didn't realize it sucked, okay? It wasn't that good 10 years ago. It wasn't that good 15 years ago, okay? We're bringing it back. It's 2018 because it's crazy. And somebody in another country's throwing a shit ton of money, so we're going to bring it to them. And it's going to be bad. It's going to be bad.
Anytime you get to see the heartbreak old man, it was heartbreaking that he cut his hair.
He's hard attack having old man is what he is. Oh. He ain't breaking hearts. He's taking baby aspirin, so he doesn't have a heart attack. So he doesn't have a heart condition, okay?
Wow.
In between doses of Ensure, he might be able to buck his body back to throw a super kick, okay?
Damn. Anyway, it was crazy because you could see this setup happening a mile away, and it was just like, come on. I think the biggest shock was...
Please don't. No, they did it! Oh, God! That was the reaction, okay?
The biggest shock was, one, Sean, his hair is all gone. I think that was what more people were interested in. seeing his bald head and actually seeing him back in the ring. Two, the Undertaker, yes, while he did look wobbly and broken down, he didn't look like absolute pure trash like the last time we saw him at Mania. So that was a good thing. And so now we're interested to see if the mayor can actually take bumps, or is his country, city, state, municipality going to pull the plug and be like, yo, you're impeached? I mean, these are questions that we need answered and asked, and so we know when we go into it. DX is...
Pardon me. The man like only they can.
They're iconic, but they're also part of, for this Crown Jewel show, remember, this is for, not for necessarily India, but the country of Saudi Arabia, whatever. They're sponsoring this shindig, and these people have not seen full on DX outside of the videos. So to bring back the original two to let them clown a little bit and play up for the cameras, why the hell not? Again, the
does that humor translate to the culture of Saudi Arabia, where they actually have police of vice and virtue? And I think the old rich white men are breaking all the rules of the police of vice and virtue by doing some of the things they've done in public with the oily fat guy and super kicking little kids in the cafeteria line.
Well, that DX has evolved, though. I mean, the DX that you see now is much different, much tamer. You know, Shawn Michaels, you know, now a born-again Christian, and Triple H, well, Triple H.
That's why Triple H told people to suck it, and Michaels just kind of threw his hands up. Because he was a born-again Christian the second time around. He became a born-again Christian when he left WWE for the first time. And then when he came back in like 2005, he was a born again Christian. Okay, so we don't give that excuse as to why DX is watered down now, because it was watered down 10 years ago when he came back that way. It's gonna be terrible. It's gonna be terrible.
I hope you're wrong, because I like DX.
I'm upset. I heard you say that.
All right, next. Buddy Murphy defeats Cedric Alexander. The age of Alexander is over. Not only does Cedric Alexander lose his championship, but now, in the main event of 205 Live, he loses again to Tony Nese this time.
We're now in the backslide of Alexander, perhaps.
Buddy Murphy getting a great win in front of his home crowd, and my goodness, he got an ovation, which I was totally shocked in comparison to the Iconics, who the Iconics did everything that they could. They even dropped, that they're from there, and they were back home, and they sort of reacted, but man, not to the extent that they did for Buddy Murphy.
Well, I think Buddy Murphy too, anybody who's been watching Buddy Murphy since he came to 205 Live, the guy is a workhorse. Okay, like, I don't know where the heck this Buddy Murphy was, several years ago, but the Buddy Murphy now is an amazing athlete, an outstanding competitor. He's been having great matches with everybody up and down the card, from the guys in Lucha House Party to Mustafa Ali, to this match with Cedric. It's fantastic to see him. But then Cedric loses twice in a row, he loses again to Nese, but realistically they talk about like the travel, like he didn't want to take the time off. Like, he literally was there in Australia and then flew back to 10,000 miles and was wrestling again. Where Buddy Murphy wasn't there. He was like, oh, I'm taking extra time to celebrate in my hometown, etc. So I'm interested to see where they go with Cedric. Does he do this kind of losing spin for a little bit and have to kind of reinvent himself and climb back from the bottom? But Buddy Murphy, the top of his game, absolutely. And yes, the crowd was crazy for him, crazy for his win. When he kicked out of the lumbar check, they went nuts. When he hit Murphy's Law and his victory and all this, they were behind him 100%. exciting to see. Good match. Yet again, I'm all in with 205 Live. That's my favorite program right now because NXT is giving me this stuff where there's just not as many people on the show that I care about. So seeing Buddy Murphy on 205 and which direction the show takes now with the new champion, the first new champion since WrestleMania when Cedric won that belt. That's very excited to see the stories that develop there.
It's been 365 days. Cedric was bound to lose. Every dog has his day. Buddy had his day, and now Cedric's got to perhaps gain a little weight, maybe move to the main roster. I don't know.
Now, speaking of 205 Live, things changing. Of course, now it's no longer live because it's on Wednesdays.
They call it 205 Live, but it's just 205.
Well, it's taped live.
Yeah, there you go.
205 Live, the Cruiserweight division, not only has seen the age of Alexander fall, and not only have we seen the rise and crowning of Buddy Murphy, but now the Cruiserweight division is feeling the power of love. As Mike Kanellis made his presence known with wife in town, in tow, attacked Lince Dorado. So it looks like Kanellis is now a cruiserweight.
Apparently so, yeah. He's made his presence felt on 205 Live. You know, returning, he had substance abuse issues that he was pretty public about. He went to rehab, got himself cleaned up. Maria got injured.
Maria got pregnant.
There you go.
That's an injury.
It's a very devastating injury.
Oh, yeah.
It can affect approximately up to 54% of the population. But so she was officially cleared to return to the ring. I saw something about it last week. So they put her through her. And, you know, through the Kanellises, right back into the mix on 205 Live. Never been a Mike Bennett fan. I don't understand. I just don't get it. He's okay. I have other people who scream his praises in my ear every time I talk to them. And I just never really been a fan of his. But always interesting to see some new faces on the 205 and wondering where they go from here. Does he stay on 205 or does he hop around? Now we have other people from 205 doing different things on different places. Drake Maverick being, you know, he's the general manager of 205, but he's the manager of the Authors of Pain on Monday Night Raw. Leo Rush, you know, 205 Live superstar, but he is, you know, the mouthpiece / manager, running mate, friend, whatever you want to call him, of Bobby Lashley on Monday Night Raw as well. So Tony Nese was on NXT just this past week against Johnny Gargano. So guys in 205, although they're on that show, apparently, even if they're in the Cruiserweight division, are not restricted to only participating on that show as it once was, that you were kind of on 205 and that was your brand. Now guys from there are kind of mixing and moving around a little bit. So Mike may or may not join the Cruiserweight division. He may just be stirring some stuff up, and that was the first place he decided to pop up. That yet again remains to be seen.
So that's going to be interesting. Another interesting note, that Ronda Rousey and the Bella Twins, after defeating the Riot Squad, we had a rematch the next night. And, of course, victorious again, Rousey and the Bella Twins. But post-match, the Bella Twins began their Bellution as they attacked Ronda Rousey. And now at Evolution, it will be Ronda Rousey versus Nikki Bella.
Why not Ronda versus both of them? I mean,
the Bellas turned heel for like the 900th time. I'm like, they turned face and heel more times than Lex Luger and the Big Show combined. Kind of thrown by that. Yeah, but just basically give them both to Ronda and let Ronda rough them both up. Realistically, she
Give a kick, Brie can take a kick. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, kind of. Okay. The other big thing from leading up to Evolution, not only is the Bellas turn, but they combined what were originally two advertised singles matches into a tag match. We had advertised the first match advertised for Evolution was the returning Trish Stratus versus Alexa Bliss. And then the second match, okay, another Hall of Famer in leader returns, and she'll be returning to take on an old rival in Mickie James. Okay, so now they've added and combined that into a tag match where you'll have Trish and Lita teaming together against Mickie and Alexa. Not sure if they're trying to cut down the match timing. Not sure if they're concerned about, you know, how the match would go if they were two singles matches. Thinking with a tag match, they can do more shenanigans. Not have to worry about ring rust for Lita and Trish, who haven't been competing regularly. You know, they're still in great shape, but they haven't been competing regularly in the pro wrestling ring. So that was to me almost as a bigger, what the hell kind of, where, what were they thinking with that more so than the Bellas turn? I could give a crap less.
I can tell you what they were thinking with that. They were thinking that these girls have been in the PC, they've been going over the matches and what they wanted them to do, and that it was not going well. That Lita is still, after all these years, after getting her neck broken on the set of
Dark, not that good like she was originally. Yeah. Before the injury,
she's more gun shy. She's still not pulling the trigger on her moves, and especially the damn moonsault, which people kind of sort of want to see.
That and the diving hurricanrana were her two things.
Yeah,
boys, when and she wasn't in matches.
Trish is what, two kids in now, at least maybe one and a half. I don't know. And being out of a wrestling ring, yoga's good. I mean, just ask DDP, but it's not like taking bumps. And there's only so much Alexa can do, being that, you know, she is the goddess of the WWE. But you don't want your Hall of Famers to look back compared to your people they're in there against, as far as conditioning goes, cardio goes, and the actual match itself. So why not just combine them and you have a better chance of making it more memorable, please.
Covering for everybody's possible faults.
Yeah, I definitely think that's smart. You know, cover yourselves in case something. I mean, they have not been in rings for a long time, and
you don't want to tarnish their legacy by bringing them back and having this really awful, you know, stinker of a performance.
And this, in a way, you protect a Bliss from having to take the L, you know, because at the end of the day, like Tamika said, goddess of the WWE.
Yeah, well, I mean, and Alexa, I mean, you know, of course, Mickey's a regular competitor as well, but Mickey's, yet again, she's had children of her own. She's a little bit older. Alexa's still the young one who essentially can be a focal point of the division for 10, 15 years if she stays healthy and wants to continue wrestling. So you don't want her having to carry the workload and possibly hurt herself or be blamed somehow if something doesn't go right with one of your, you know, your legends. So I understand it, but at the same time, I was kind of like, wow, they're just kind of like quietly, they just kind of real quickly threw that together, you know, did a little bit of storyline stuff and threw it together as a tag match.
So moving on, the Shield, Drew McIntyre, Dolph Ziggler, Strowman, I've seen spoilers that, you know, that at TLC, they're going to have this match again in December. So they're just going to continue on and on and on with this. So I'm just, it's whatever. And now they're playing, you know, the whole thing with Ambrose possibly leaving the Shield because he doesn't fit in.
Yeah, he's been gone too long. He doesn't fit in with the group. And that's, you know, I mean, yet again, it's getting over. They're putting on the entertaining matches. They're going to stretch it out. They're going to stretch it out as long as they can. Until, yeah, Ambrose, whether he doesn't leave the Shield, but he may, you know, part ways from them and we get this heel Ambrose that everybody's been begging for since the Shield's inception. They want to see him be a heel and be more like the Jon Moxley and cut the kinds of promos that he cut as Jon Moxley in the independent scene. I think a lot of fans have been wanting to see a less funny, less goofy, more serious, more violent Dean. Whether he gets that way or not, I think that's what they're teasing, and that's what some people kind of wetting some people, you know, salivating with anticipation of that possible happening.
That's the tease, but you're going to get Roman heel turn at TLC.
You think Roman's going to be the one that heel turn?
Yep.
The Scream Queen is calling it right now.
Everybody else had their turn, damn it.
Most people would consider Roman having been a heel for a long time,
though. Yeah, well, make it official.
So now you just make it official. Yeah. It's going to go over real well with the 5-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to cry.
Good. It's not those brats.
All right, so moving on to the fun stuff here. AJ Styles defeats Samoa Joe. I mean, what else can I say? These guys have had a fantastic series of matches. I'm loving every single minute of it. Why am I surprised? I shouldn't be. I'm not. AJ Styles, I feel like, has redeemed himself in my eyes from just, you know, just some of the underwhelming matches with Nakamura to just knocking it out of the park with Samoa Joe. And I thought that at the end of the year, I would probably have AJ Styles in my top 10, but in my, you know, 6 through 10 section. But no, I think that with these matches, he's back on my top 5.
Wow.
Well, I mean, and yet again, another outstanding match from these guys. The biggest takeaway, though, is definitively in for AJ. You know, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. There's no, well, maybe he beat him, maybe he didn't, maybe it was close and he just caught him. No, he put the stamp, signed, sealed, and delivered, and defeated Joe. So where do both guys go from here over the next 4 months is the main thing. I mean, you could have them continue, but the way that that match ended so definitively, like realistically, AJ has no other reason to battle Joe anymore. He's proved that he could beat him, and he could beat him definitively. So what do you do with Joe? You know, the problem with the Monster Destroyer character is every time he takes that big loss, he then has to go back down and rebuild to somebody else. So where does Joe go? Who becomes the next foil or the next challenger for AJ? I mean, we got, okay, well, I mean, in theory, it's Daniel Bryan again, I guess, right? That's who it is with him defeating The Miz. It's Daniel Bryan and AJ, so then do we go Samoa Joe and The Miz? I don't know if The Miz can handle Samoa Joe. I think The Miz is a father, and he doesn't want to die. He's got a hot wife and children in a reality show. You don't need to put that guy in the ring with Joe. Joe will absolutely and utterly murder Mike Mizanin.
They put Joe in the ring with somebody who has no fear, who is obsolete.
Sarah Mieta?
Pentagon is not signed with WWE yet.
Oh, shucks.
Yet.
You gonna put him in there with Bray Wyatt?
Nope. Put him in there with somebody who just lost a brother but gained the world.
Gained a screwdriver in his ear?
Exactly.
You put him in there with Jeff Hardy? You do that? Exactly. You do that whole thing again?
Exactly. Well, you do it in the first time in WWE.
You do it first time in WWE, yeah. But I can do that. Jeff would definitely be willing to take some nasty beatings from Samoa Joe.
Been there, done that. It's called Tuesday. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
And finally, the last thing I want to bring up out of the Super Show then is the very quick match between Daniel Bryan and Miz. A quick roll-up becomes the number one contender, Daniel Bryan. So a crown jewel, it'll be AJ Styles versus Daniel Bryan for the WWE Championship. They're going to get plenty of time in this match, which, you know, it'll be great considering the first match that they had right after WrestleMania, you know, went short via interference. However, I think that this match may also end up with interference, as I think, you know, Miz, you know, feels like the shot was stolen from him and he should be the number one contender. I could pretty much see Miz getting involved here and preventing either man, or at least preventing Daniel Bryan from winning the championship. I really want AJ Styles, first of all, to beat the record and be the longest WWE champion of all time.
So do you think that they turn it into a three-way, or it just Miz cost Daniel Bryan his shot, and then Daniel Bryan and Miz go back to fighting again?
Yeah, I think they'll extend it. We may see a three-way down the line.
DB's come back from, you know, wrestling death, so to speak. They're going to put the title on him. AJ's going to turn heel, unfortunately, and Miz will be somewhere in the mix. I don't know what you do with Miz at this point. Maybe a three-way down the line, but I see Daniel Bryan winning this title at when he gets his opportunity, and then everything going downhill for the SmackDown roster as AJ loses his mind and goes after the champ.
Like an AJ heel turns in the works? You just thinking everybody in the month is going to turn heel. Okay, what's going on? Some people got to turn babyface, okay?
Nah, we're good.
All right, so let's go ahead and move on here and talk a little bit about what's going on. The Crown Jewel, of course, the main event will be Brock Lesnar, Braun Strowman, Roman Reigns for the Universal Championship, the Generation X versus the Brothers of Destruction, AJ Styles versus Daniel Bryan. But then there's this World Cup, right? The World Cup is going to have four wrestlers from Raw, four wrestlers from SmackDown so far qualifying. And this, is, I think, goes along with the people of Saudi Arabia and the government officials here. They want people that they've watched 10, 15 years ago. So far, we have John Cena, Kurt Angle, Jeff Hardy, and Randy Orton qualified for the World Series.
This is just a one-night thing, though, right? It's just a one-night kind of tournament, whatever.
That's what it seems like, yes.
Well, yet again, like Yellowman was saying, it's people, it's the biggest names of the last 15 years, you know, for the first time live. So we're going to see some return matches 10 years past the prime when these matches should have happened. It'll be like one of those old school Raw shows, man.
Which brings me to my next topic here, SmackDown 1000. Officially, the return of Rey Mysterio, full-time in WWE. He will be facing off Shinsuke Nakamura on Tuesday at SmackDown Live 1000 in a World Cup qualifying match. Any guesses as who's going to win that one?
Based on the other participants in that tournament, I'm assuming Rey Mysterio is going to win that one. And we'll get him versus Kurt Angle in the first round in a match that's, you know, their matches many years ago were at a very, very fast pace, but that was many, many surgeries and years ago. And this match will be like one of those matches, but it'll be like in the school zone instead of in the fast lane. My goodness. This show's for Saudi Arabia, and it's for the people that they want to see that they haven't had the chance to see live. People they've been watching on TV for years. It's not for as much for the American fans who've been watching and following storylines, because most of the new talent is not featured. Or not, at least not featured as predominantly.
So far, for SmackDown Live 1000, we have advertised The Undertaker, Michelle McCool, Vicky Guerrero, Teddy Long, Age, Evolution, of course, Triple H, Batista, Randy Orton, and Ric Flair, and, of course, Rey Mysterio, who's coming back, Tori Wilson. This is going to be a pretty stacked show here, SmackDown Live 1000.
But just like the old school Raws, man. It's a trip down memory lane. Look who else showed up. Woo! It's cool to see them back on the TVs.
Still not announced. The Rock.
He won't be announced. He's going to make an appearance via satellite. It's still going to blow the roof off the place just to have him via satellite.
I would think that you say The Rock is going to be in some capacity because he is The Rock and this is your 1,000th episode. You want as much on the rating pool as possible, as many people to tune in, sell any seats that may not have been sold already. I think it's crazy that they have not said anything either way yet.
That leads me to believe that he's not going to be there live. If he was going to make a live appearance, you would advertise it to the roof and back. But if he's just going to do something via satellite, no, you want that to quote unquote be a surprise. Because if you say he's going to be there and then he just shows up via satellite, you're going to have a lot of disappointed people. But if you leave them with the expectation, not knowing if he's going to be there or not, and then he shows up via satellite, people still get crazy and they get excited. So you keep the expectations low, and then a via satellite appearance pops the crowd like crazy. So via satellite is where my money's at.
Via satellite is probably right, but at least, man, tell people to tune in so they can watch the damn satellite show.
Well, I think a lot of people will tune in to watch SmackDown 1000. It's pretty much a stacked show already. Anytime, you have The Undertaker.
And you get to see somebody go one-on-one with The Undertaker.
And then turn it into a tag team match.
And then it's a tag team match, please. Holla.
So it'll be fun. It'll be great to see how they interact, the women, of course, with Michelle McCool coming to make an appearance. Could we make a surprise appearance of her longtime bestie?
Of Layla? I mean, I would much rather see Layla than Michelle. I felt of the two, Layla was definitely the better of the pair. But it seems like that would be something you'd want to advertise. You know, not just Michelle McCool being there, but Lay Cool being there. Does their NXT rookie show up with them or not?
Who is their NXT rookie?
Caval.
Oh, she's
AKA Low Key. Yes, that was supposed to be the hilarious mismatch of personality. It was Lay Cool bringing personality and persona to Caval, who ended up winning the season, and quote unquote winning a contract. But he's low key. He doesn't stay any one place for too long.
Yeah, going back to Lay Cool, it would be good to see Layla Ali to see if she still got it. Because we did not see her at the Women's Rumble. So where is she? How is she? Who is she? You know, did she fall into some hard diva times? I mean, these are things we need to see and know. So hopefully she comes back to the fold for SmackDown 1000.
You know, the NXT UK, since it was announced, they said they were going to do tapings. They've done plenty of tapings. When are we going to watch these tapings? Well, it's official. Starting October 17th, live on WWE Network at 8 p.m. British time. Because that's a Wednesday. They're not going to go at the same time as NXT. NXT UK will be airing on WWE Network. Finally, we'll get to see all this stuff that's been getting taped. It should be a lot of fun with some great matches with some of the best UK talent and the women. And this tournament, I assume that the tournament for the Women's UK NXT Championship is going to be part of these tapings. So I'm pretty much excited to see those as well. But that'll be October 17th, 8 p.m. British time. Are you guys excited to see NXT UK?
It'll be approximately 2 a.m. on Thursday in America and the East Coast where we are. So we'll pretty much, I don't know, I mean, I'm not staying up till 2 a.m. to watch some British folks on the network when we can just watch it the next day at a regular time. Interested to see the different kind of influx of stars. I mean, we know a couple of the people that will be on there. Some of them made NXT appearances. Some of them have made appearances in Atlanta. Isla Dawn being in that. And, you know, she was in the Mae Young Classic, but she's also in the tournament to crown the first women's champion for the NXT UK brand. My question is, how many more NXT brands do we get? Do we get an NXT, you know, are we only a year away from getting an NXT Saudi Arabia? Are we only a couple years away from getting an NXT Australia?
Get NXT Mexico. That's your next one.
Yeah.
Yeah, got to go south of the border first. A lot of people there.
Yeah, well, that's true. There are a lot of people in Mexico. A lot of them are here, though. So you don't need their own brand.
No, luchadores and luchadores need a outlet on the network exclusive.
Do we get NXT Canadian?
Nah, no way.
No. Too many of them down here.
Damn
sure. They don't need their own show.
NXT Superestrellas.
Canadia dice.
Oh, Lord.
But yeah, so I'm stoked to finally get to see these matches that we've seen on the Twitter being talked about. Finally come here. Finally they're doing something with all this footage.
Novel thing. Collecting a bunch of footage and finally releasing it.
And with that is the show for today. Thank you for listening. Make sure you subscribe to the Fans of Wrestling Show on the FOW Radio Network. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else you can find podcasts, I'm sure. And make sure you check us out on the Twitter machine at FOW Radio. Danny's on Twitter at Danny F in Danger. Mika's on Twitter at Mika Villas. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. And until next time, keep watching wrestling.